Radija Študent.
Lep pozdrav v intervjuju Radija Študent, kjer danes gostimo ameriško zasedbo Wolves in the Throne Room, ki bodo nocoj igrali skupaj s Pestilence v Gala Hali na Metelkovi. Zasedba ustvarja ambientalno in hkrati avantgardno black metal godbo, ki je navdahnjena strani ekološkega spiritualizma in okoljevarstveništva. Pogovarjali smo se z Aaronom Waverjem, bobnarjem in enim od dveh ustanovnih članov zasedbe. Poslušamo delček ene njihove skladbe, na to pa sledi pogovor.
I have a few questions about your album, Black Skate. I'm interested in what's the main concept of the album and where did you draw your inspiration from? And also, what are the lyrics about?
Okay. The record before Black Skate was called Two Hunters. I don't know if you've heard it or not. And when we finished making Two Hunters, we already knew what the next record was going to sound like. Because we wanted the two records to balance each other in an energetic sort of way. Two Hunters is very, it feels very moonlit to me. It's very mysterious, very smoky. It has a feminine energy to it. There's a lot of female vocals on it.
Yeah.
And we wanted to make Black Cascade be a record that's very forceful, very stripped down and focused, masculine feeling, patriarchal almost. Feels very orderly. The sound of, you know, drawing order out of chaos. And so the two records balance one another in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And the concept of Black Cascade, it has to do with a lot of things, but I think the most important theme is the idea of connecting very deeply to a certain place,
mm-hmm.
on a spiritual level, on a metaphysical level, on an occult level. And that's what this band is all about, is we're very interested in connecting very deeply to our home. You know, we live in a really beautiful place in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
In between the Cascade Mountains and the Olympic Mountains, at the base of Puget Sound, which drains out into the Pacific Ocean. And it's a very special place we all feel very connected to. and we're interested in really setting down roots there. You know, so much of modern life is about moving around at this frenzied pace, always moving from one place to the next.
Yeah.
Always saying, well, I'm not really satisfied here. I'd be much happier if I lived in New York City, or I'd be much happier if I lived in Los Angeles or San Francisco. You know, I should always be rootless, free. And there's, you know, there's good things about that. There's good things about that quintessential American freedom. There's also a dark side to it.
Yeah.
And part of this band is about exploring the idea of connecting to one spot and sacrificing that freedom in order to have a deeper connection to, you know, to create some sort of tradition, to create some sort of, you know, sense of locality. And that's what Black Cascade is about trying to understand the mythic nature of the place that we've come to live in,
mm-hmm.
Which I think is a very, you know, I think it's a very natural human process. I mean, that's how religions develop, is that people spread out and come to live in different places over the millennia. Through their experience with the natural world, that's how their myths develop, that's how their religions develop. And we're interested in, you know, somehow being a part of that process on a personal level.
Mm-hmm. And the name, specifically Black Cascade, where does it come from?
Well, on one level it refers to the Cascade Mountains,
uh-huh.
which is the main, the predominant geographical feature where we live. The Cascades run from near Vancouver, British Columbia, all the way through Washington State and all through Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a place that's very special to us. You know, I spend as much time as possible hiking and camping in those mountains. And we took all the album photographs for the record in the Cascade Mountains. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just feels like a very powerful place. You know, it's a very wild place. You know, there's old-growth forests there that have never been logged.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, it's very special. So, I mean, yeah, the Black Cascade means a number of things, but the most important one is referring to that sense of geography.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And as you said, on previous albums you included guest vocal appearances,
mm-hmm. yeah.
female guest vocals. So, as you said, the main part is like doing the balancing out, or was there, I mean, the main part that you excluded the vocals in your new album was just the balancing out, or did you want to specifically have a new approach without the vocals?
Yeah, it had more to do with balance. I mean, I would like to have those vocals on the record. I mean, I think that it adds a lot to our albums to have that different sort of perspective and different sort of energy. And actually, Jamie Myers, our friend who is sang on Diadem of 12 Stars and an EP we released recently, flew to Seattle, and we planned on her doing some vocals. But we all decided that it just didn't feel right. We felt we were just trying to force it, because we liked it, we liked the idea of it, we liked working with Jamie, but the material, it didn't really suit the material, and it didn't really suit the whole vibe of the record. It, I think it would have pushed it the wrong direction, and would have weakened the impression we were trying to make.
Yeah, and also on your previous recordings, you recorded in analog technology, and how's it... without any digital manipulation, of course. Mm-hmm. And how is it with a new album? Is it recorded in the same way?
It's you know, like every record at some point goes through a computer, whether it's recorded directly into Pro Tools or whether or not it's done all in analog format and then goes through a computer at the end for mastering, or it goes through a computer to be pressed onto CDs or onto a vinyl. And so we try to you know, keep the record in an analog format as late as possible in the process of making the record.
Yeah.
For Black Cascade, we did all the tracking on 2-inch tape on a Neve console, and then did a certain amount of tracking at our friend's home studio, and that was with the computer. You know, vocals, some of the more psychedelic guitars. We did that all in Pro Tools to give us more flexibility,
because
we could afford to be there. We could spend a month in that studio, mm-hmm. and just getting very, very deep with the material, as opposed to spending, you know, $100 an hour or whatever it costs to be in the big fancy studio in Seattle. And I feel good about making that choice, because I think that we were able to spend a lot more time with the record and not feel pressured by you know, money flying out the window.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, I don't have any particular attachment to recording in an analog format. I don't think that, you know, a lot of people say that, oh, Wolves in the Throne Room has these sort of naturalistic tendencies. They must want to record an analog as opposed to digital because it's more natural somehow.
Yeah, it's a common opinion.
I don't believe that at all. No. I think that, I mean, on a, you know, on a theoretical level, on a existential level, as soon as you record something, that's changed it. That's changed the nature of it. It's no longer a spontaneous manifestation. It's no longer something that's ephemeral, that happens once and then disappears, and all you have is your memories. Yeah. It's a recorded document. And whether you record it onto, you know, the most high-tech Pro Tools format, or onto, you know, a wax disc in 1910, I think it still has the same psychological end result.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, we record into analog because I like the sound. I think it sounds the way that I want it to sound. And it provides the sonic palette that I think that we require to convey the spirit that we want to create. But no, I don't think it's more pure in any sense than recording on a computer. Mm-hmm. I like lo-fi digital recordings. I mean, so much black metal that you hear is recorded on a digital 4-track, you know, that cost $100. And it has more spirit and power to it than an Aerosmith record, of course, recorded in this fancy
studio. It has its charm.
Yeah.
How would you describe the collaboration with Southern Lord Records?
Southern Lord is I think it's the only label I'd want to deal with. Because basically it's a DIY label. It's basically a punk rock label. But at the same time, They have you know, fairly wide distribution. The records can be available in Slovenia or all over Europe or wherever. But I don't feel like we're compromising our integrity by connecting ourselves with a label like, say, like Relapse or Metal Blade or Century Media.
Yeah.
These sort of labels are, you know, I just do not trust their motivations. I think they're purely in the business to make money.
Of course.
And Southern Lord is a, you know, it's a business for sure. But Greg Anderson, who runs Southern Lord and is in Sun O and a variety of other bands, his intention is to create a platform for artists to make their music widely available. And I really believe that to be true. I think he's a really honorable person. So I feel really good working with Southern Lord. It's kind of the best of both worlds for us.
Mm-hmm.
And the only other way I'd want to release music is purely on our own. Just press it and release it ourselves, and just only sell it on tour or via mail to interested people. No, I'd never want to work with, you know, Century Media, this kind of bullshit.
Understand. Yeah. And tell me about black metal. Why did you choose black metal as a form of your expression?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of an unexpected choice in a lot of ways. Because, you know, we're not from Europe. We don't have any connection to the Scandinavian scene. But black metal at this point is a worldwide phenomenon. I think it's become very meaningful to people, you know, all over the world. And the reason for that is I think that black metal fundamentally is it's an attempt to touch some sort of primitive spirit, some sort of ancient spirit. It's saying that in this modern life, it's a very easy life, but there's something missing. There's some spiritual dimension, perhaps, that's lacking. And that's a source of a great deal of sorrow and a great deal of sadness in people's lives. I know it is in my life. You know, I've always felt like something is missing. Some sort of connection to the earth, or the connection to tradition, or connection to spirituality has always been, I've always felt it missing.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, black metal, you know, really powerfully expresses that sense of alienation and loss and loneliness. And it suggests a course of action. It says that, you know, we can seize control of the world around us and through our own force of will create the world that we want to live in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not interested in the satanic, nihilistic side of black metal. I'm not interested in, you know, the right-wing politics and you know, sort of gruesome and morbid imagery.
Yeah.
To me, that's really meaningless. I'm only interested in what I think is the like the deeper truth that's hidden within it. And it's a spiritual truth. It's an occult truth. It's hard to put into words. But I think that it transcends, you know, the I think silly cartoonish aspects of black metal. And I think that's why it's become so it's become such a worldwide phenomenon, because people hear this music and it touches something, you know, transcendent, and it speaks to something, you know, mythic and archetypal. In a way that I don't think any other form of music does right now. I think in a lot of ways black metal is the most important music of this generation. I think that it sums up, you know, our particular situation we find ourselves in right now in a really poignant way. I grew up mostly involved in punk music and in underground DIY culture. And, I mean, that way of looking at the world, like this political way of looking at the world, doesn't really make sense to me anymore. Maybe it's just because I'm older. But I don't really think in terms of politics. You know, I used to think that, you know, things would be much better, or problems would be solved if we could have some political revolution and install this sort of, you know, new government and this and that, this new economic system. I don't believe that anymore. I think that I'm much more interested in the spiritual side of things. You know, spiritual revolution, spiritual warfare. That's just where I'm at in my thought process right now.
So, about the link you said between the eco-spiritual vision you have and black metal, but do you feel like you're contributing directly to the radical environmentalism?
Well, certainly not in any direct way. I mean, we specifically don't have an activist agenda. You know, we don't publish lyrics. We don't, you know, pass out pamphlets at our concerts urging people to take any sort of action on any sort of issue. I'm really against that idea. It's fine that bands choose to do that, but it doesn't feel appropriate for our music. Because we're not talking about any specific sort of idea or any specific sort of issue. I mean, I'm only interested in trying to sum up feelings and try to sum up a spirit. It's like creating a painting, you know? It's like creating a painting with sound is the way that I look at it. That's what I want to do. And I hate the idea of a painting that has a propaganda slogan on it or a political slogan. The painting is just a picture. And the viewer, or in this case the listener, draws from that whatever he or she wishes. And if the artist is successful, you manage to convey what you're trying to get across. And I'd rather just leave it at that. But, you know, I'm very supportive of the radical ecological movement in the States. You know, I support anyone who takes radical action in favor of, you know, defending wildness and defending wild places and working against the process of turning this whole planet into a machine. I think that's a very it's a very negative process, and it's one that I really hate. But no, we're not an activist band for sure.
Okay, so some questions about the tour. How is it going so far? As I recall, you don't tour much in Europe. So how would you describe the atmosphere here in comparison to United States?
Well, of course, touring in Europe, and I'm sure every band will tell you this, is a much different affair than touring in the States. It's, I think that Europe as a whole places a much greater emphasis on music and art and culture, and values it a lot more than the United States does. And so, you know, if you show up at a venue in the U.S., there'll be no food waiting for you, there'll be no hot beverages, there'll be no place to stay, there'll be like a filthy hole and a shitty stage and a broken monitor system, and you'll be lucky if someone smacks you in the back of the head at the end of the night instead of giving you any money. It's much, much rougher going in the States, which I kind of like in a lot of ways. So touring in Europe is much kind of cushier in that respect, which is kind of a nice treat for American bands. When American bands always come in for the first time, they just can't believe it. They can't believe that there's hot food, and they can't believe there's a band apartment to stay in. It just, you know, blows people's minds. So that's one part of touring in Europe, which is interesting, that I enjoy. As far as the shows go, it feels very similar to playing in the States. I think that people who are drawn to our music, It doesn't really matter, you know, where they're coming from. I think they're interested in it for the same reasons, regardless of their where they're coming from. You know, obviously there's going to be some difference between different countries. You know, the crowd in Germany, for instance, is oftentimes a very hardcore, like, black metal audience.
Yeah.
Whereas the crowd in, you know, a bigger city like London or Paris might be more of the the audience you'd see at a Sun O concert, you know, maybe more of a intellectual kind of audience, or maybe even a hipstery kind of audience, you know. I don't like to label people like that, but, you know, just, you know, looking out into the crowd, I can probably make those assumptions. And it's the same in the States, you know. Certain places, it's a hardcore metal crowd. Other places, it's, you know, maybe more mixed.
Mm-hmm. And it's your first time in Slovenia.
It is, yeah.
What are your expectations for tonight?
Well, I'm really, really curious. I really like this place that we're at. I'm always so pleased when I arrive at these kind of autonomous zones. I don't know, you know, I'm not quite sure the exact nature of this place, whether it's a squat or whatever, but, you know, it feels really good, and it's so pleasing that cities and communities in Europe, you know, prioritize these sorts of, what would you call it, like an autonomous region or a self-governed sort of?
Yes, it's called like the city inside a city.
Yeah.
Metelkova mesto means city, Metelkova, and it's more like, yeah.
And the police don't come in here?
So, well, yeah, they come.
Oh, they do?
Yeah, they do.
That's too bad. Yeah, this kind of thing would never exist in the United States. You know, we, at home, one of our, one thing that we've put a lot of effort into over the years was creating an all-ages space, a underground music space in Olympia called Menium. And it was very ambitious. It was a, it was going to be a restaurant, a bar, and a very large music space, and then a place for bands to stay on the European model. And it went very well for a couple of years until the authorities caught on, and now it's just completely shut down. You know, it's very, very difficult to create a space for, you know, alternative culture or music and art in the United States. They don't want it they don't want it there.
Oh yeah, it's same with Metelkova, but I think for now we are too many.
Oh yeah. That's
maybe,
good. That's good.
Maybe in the future things will change. I hope not.
Yeah, hopefully not.
So, yeah. Can we expect any surprises at tonight's performance? Maybe some special equipment or instrument that will help set the unique mood that it's present on your studio recordings?
Well, you know, we do our best in Europe. You know, we're very particular about the places that we play. And we work very hard to, you know, create an atmosphere. It's very, very important to us to create a space that feels otherworldly. And in the U.S., we have a pretty wide palette of tools to do that. We carry our own lighting rig and, you know, hundreds of candles, and demand that the venue turn off every single light in the building, except for the lights that we provide. And we have incense and smoke and, you know, everything that we can bring on the road in order to create this atmosphere where people can become introspective and let the music help you go inside yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And in Europe, we have to scale that down a bit because, you know, we're in a foreign country. We don't have the same sort of resources, but we do our best to create a meditative atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
That's very, very important to us. So yeah, hopefully we'll be able to succeed at tonight's show.
Cool. So yeah, in the end, one last question. I heard about your performances in the forest in the United States, under the tree canopies, and I don't know if you know, but today the concert was planned outside.
Yeah, I heard.
Because of the weather.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm interested. Are you disappointed in some sort of way that you're playing in a club? Or would you rather play outside?
Yeah, I mean, I always love playing outside. And we're very lucky to be able to do that on a pretty regular basis. So far, the highlight of this tour was outside of Salzburg. We have some friends who are in a band called Our Survival Depends on Us. I don't know if you've heard this band. And they've become very good friends of ours over the years. And one of the fellows in the band, his family owns an incredibly beautiful old farm on the side of this mountain in the Alps, you know, maybe a 300-400-year-old barn and farmhouse, you know, surrounded by these immense mountains. You know, it's just more beautiful than you can imagine. I'd never seen anything like it. And they set up this amazing performance for us. It was on the summer solstice. They built a bonfire 10 feet tall and roasted a whole pig and a whole sheep and had barrels of wine and beer and mead they'd made, and set up an outdoor stage for us. And that was a really amazing show. We felt so, so gratified that those friends went to so much work. They worked for 2-3 weeks every day to build the stage and build a place to eat. It was really, really amazing. And I look forward to doing more and more shows like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, playing in clubs is fine, but it's certainly not my preference. I think after this tour, we plan on reassessing the way that we tour. I'd like to try to find a new way to do it that stays more true to our vision and more effectively creates an atmosphere. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the States, it's easy for us. And I think that the next tour we do in the States will be no rock clubs at all, hopefully.
Yeah.
I would like to play only outside or only just in warehouse spaces we can work very hard to transform.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure how we do it logistically. It would mean bringing our own PA on the road with us, which, you know, gets difficult logistically, but it's definitely our dream. We'll see. I don't know. We're pretty ambitious with the atmospheres that we want to create, and we'll continue to put a great deal of effort into it.
Well, I sure hope you succeed in that, and I want to thank you for your time.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for the interview.
And see you tonight in Galahala.
All right.
Okay. Bye.
Poslušali ste intervju z zasedbo Wolves in the Throne Room, ki bo nocoj ob boku zasedbe Pestilence igrala v Gali Hali na Metelkovi. Intervju je pripravil Vid Milojković.
Intervju Radija Študent.